Good morning. Faye here. A reading from Deuteronomy, chapter 5. The Ten Commandments. Moses convened all Israel and said to them, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and ordinances that I am addressing to you today. You shall learn them and observe them diligently. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb. Not with our ancestors did the Lord make this covenant, but with us, all of us who are here alive today. The Lord spoke with you face to face at the mountain, out of the fire. At that time, I was standing between the Lord and you to declare to you the words of the Lord. For you were afraid because of the fire. It did not go up the mountain. And he said, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of their parents to the third and fourth generations of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. For 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you or your son, or your daughter, or your male or female servant, or your ox, or your donkey, or any of your livestock, or the resident alien in your towns, so that your male and female servant may rest as well as you. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Honor your father and your mother, as the Lord your God commanded you, so that your days may be long and that it may go well with you in the land that the Lord your God has given you. You shall not murder, neither shall you commit adultery, neither shall you steal. Neither shall you bear false witness against your neighbor. Neither shall you covet your neighbor's partner. Neither shall you desire your neighbor's house or field or male or female servant or ox or donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Hi, everybody. Just give me a second here. My name is Curtis, for those of you who don't know me. And I am trying to get slides going, and then we can actually get going. Okay. There we go. So, as with Joy earlier, I also wish to express my gratitude to the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples who have never ceded the territory on which I live and work, and many of you live and work as well. So, today's text is on a little-known passage called the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments, as you know, are connected to a larger set of material often referred to as simply as the Law, or the Torah, given by God through Moses to the Israelites. The Israelites, have left the oppression of Pharaoh in Egypt, and they've headed into the wilderness. God has provided for their needs, and now God begins to explain her expectations for community living. This is what the law is about. And this law is given on a place sometimes called Mount Sinai, sometimes called Mount Horeb. So I want to begin by telling you a short story. Back in 2007, 2008, Aaron and I were living in Jerusalem. We got to explore the land of the Bible and learn some of the history and culture of the place. And while we were there, we had our winter break, and we thought we'd go on a trip for a few days to Cairo with a friend. And we thought we'd see about hitting the traditional site for Mount Sinai on the way back. So on a Wednesday morning, we got up at 5 a.m., walked to the bus station in Jerusalem, took a five-hour bus trip down to Eilat at the southern tip of the modern state of Israel, where there's a border into Egypt. We got off the bus, and then we walked across town to the Egyptian consulate first to get our visas, because if you want to go to Cairo from Israel, you need a pre-approved visa from the consulate before you even go to the border. And so when we walked up to the consulate, we saw a sign on the door saying that the consulate was closed for a religious holiday. Wasn't expecting that. And it wasn't going to open for a few days. So no Cairo. But we weren't defeated yet. We just had to move to Plan B. We decided we'd just go to Mount Sinai because that didn't require a visa. So we took a taxi then from the consulate to the border crossing. And the international border was closed for the holiday as well. So fortunately, though, the border at least would reopen that night at 10 p.m. So we waited around in town until 10 p.m. and then came back. We crossed, found one of the three sleepy taxi drivers, and arranged for him to take us to Mount Sinai. At about 3 a.m., we pull into St. Catherine's Monastery, which is at the base of the traditional site for Mount Sinai. At this point, I haven't slept because I'm terrible at sleeping in vehicles. I've been awake for nearly 24 hours. It's dark and it's cold because it turns out deserts are cold at night. We want to get to the top just in time for sunrise, so we sit around until about 4:30 a.m. and then decide to hike by starlight. There was no moon out, but the stars in the desert apparently are amazing. So we hiked up by starlight and we made it just to the top in time to watch the first light of dawn. And as you can imagine, the sunrise is stunning, but the sunrise wasn't the only reason we climbed. Being the Bible nerd that I am, I had one more thing I wanted to do. I wanted to read the Ten Commandments in Hebrew on Mount Sinai. So we find a suitable spot away from the small crowd of other climbers, and I gather myself to begin reading. When a rather inebriated fellow stumbles over, he had ridden a camel up while imbibing the entire way, it seemed. And finding out what we were doing, he's thrilled and wants to listen. And he interrupts. He shoves a tissue in my face because I had sniffled once from the cold air. He doesn't want me to ruin it, he says. So having blown it out, I begin again and successfully read the Ten Commandments in Hebrew on Mount Sinai. This fellow, using much more colorful language than I will utter here, pronounced it brilliant. Satisfied, we hiked back down, woke up our taxi driver, it now being 8 a.m., hopped in the van for a four-hour drive back through the desert to the border. I still hadn't slept a wink, 31 hours and counting, and my incoherent answers to increasingly annoyed Israeli border guards nearly got us in serious trouble. Also, Aaron's passport had gone through the wash, and they were thoroughly unimpressed with us. But we made it back through, got bus tickets for 5 p.m., got back to Jerusalem at 10 p.m., and hit the bed. Left Wednesday 5 a.m., back Thursday 10 p.m., 41 hours of no sleep, and climbed Mount Sinai in between. Now, I tell this story partly because I just wanted to, and who doesn't like watching a friend's travel slideshow, right? Also, partly because I wanted to give you some visuals, because we've been talking about the wilderness, and so this is the traditional location for Mount Sinai. But mostly, what I wanted to illustrate was how flippantly I had treated the Ten Commandments. I hadn't really taken them all that seriously, to be honest. I showed no particular reverence. Our inebriated co-traveler showed more reverence than I did, though he may not have remembered doing so. So what does it mean to treat these 10 so-called laws with respect? Clearly, they were set apart from the rest of the law as something special. It may occur twice, almost word for word the same. Some of the laws don't feel particularly difficult. Don't murder. Check. Don't give false testimony, like in court. Check. Honor your father and mother. Check. Well, that one might actually mean something more than what we modern folks assume, but that's another conversation for another day. But you'll notice anyway, perhaps, that the 10 laws themselves are oriented in two different directions, kind of what Melanie showed with that card. The first few are oriented toward God, so things like no other gods, no idols, no misusing God's name. And the latter group are more oriented towards others. No murder, adultery, etc. Yeah, that what God wants to the people and with God. The law that bridges the two is the Sabbath command. It is a Sabbath for the Lord, but it requires community commitments. Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. So that's the God part. The community part says, you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter, or your male or female slave, or your ox or your donkey, or any of your livestock, or the resident alien in your towns, so that your male and female slave may rest as well as you. I hope that something stands out to you here. And my question is, who is being addressed? It's not the resident aliens, or the livestock, or whatever being addressed. It's the heads of families who have relative power. And their job is not necessarily just to get in a little R&R on the weekend, but to ensure that the needs of the most vulnerable are met. People with power are responsible to relieve the burden they place on others. That's what God requires. That's Sabbath. Why? Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Now, this is not a call to charitable donations that inflate the self-importance of the donor. This is a recognition that power imbalances within the community need to be addressed. It is mandated by God. It's this ritual and regular leveling of social status that sits at the heart of the Ten Commandments, bridging relationship to God with relationship to one another. And this kind of thing brings up good questions for us. Of course, you know, who has more power or privilege in our society or in our community? And we've recently had the beginnings of a conversation around the work of anti-racism led by Zenith. That is Sabbath work. Maybe that sounds like an oxymoron, Sabbath work, but I think that's really what it's calling us to. And we need to continue that. We also need to consider other ways we can practice Sabbath, thinking, for example, of gender identity and sexual orientation, or continuing on with our plans for an elevator and more accessible bathrooms. Sabbath work is also akin to the manna economy that Joy talked about a couple weeks back. When we take rest at home, on holidays, or wherever, are we doing so off the backs of others? More broadly, how does Sabbath apply to our society and its political and economic systems? Do they support or exploit? Sabbath requires us to address that. Sabbath means we question what ideals are in place, broadly in society and within the church. And I'm aware that especially within the church, we promote, perhaps unconsciously, the ideal of a white, heterosexual, married person with children. We have done some Sabbath work on this, and we can continue to question these ideals and make room instead for a much greater diversity of voices and experiences celebrating the richness it brings. We are so much healthier when we have this diversity and equality among us. And this reminds me of something I listened to a couple months back. Adele Reinhartz, who is the current president for the Academic Society of Biblical Literature, gave a plenary address to the whole society in November. She was especially thinking about Black Lives Matter, but she was applying it also more broadly and given a self-reflection on our discipline. And what she said, I think, applies well to our life in church and how we institute Sabbath. And she said, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, but our value as a community must be measured not by the experiences of those who flourish, but by those who struggle. I'll say that again. Our value as a community must be measured not by the experiences of those who flourish, but by those who struggle. And there's lots of room here for us to think about Sabbath and the beautiful vision it pushes us toward. It pushes us toward equality and care for one another. It joins, as in the Ten Commandments, our devotion to God with our commitment to one another. And it doesn't shy away from asking hard questions in the process. And it does all this, above all, in the middle of Israel's wilderness experience. Israel has been freed, and now they are learning what they are being freed into. I trust and hope that we, in the midst of our own wilderness-like experience, can put Sabbath at the heart of our vision.